We're living the season from a few different perspectives on the program. Players, coaches and an umpire as well. Ray Chamberlain's enrolled for that. I don't know whether he's having second thoughts sitting here this morning. Ray, welcome back to SEN.
Hey, Jared. Happy to be here, mate.
The intensity at the start of the season, is it more than usual?
I'd say for the prolonged three-week period, yes. I remember last year we had the new rule that related to going in the protected area, and we had a few on the first night, Carlton, Richmond. And obviously we'd had this sort of 6 months where there was no commentary to be had about footy in games, and so that we got to pop the cork on that Thursday night, and we did that with some gusto, and there was a fair bit of noise then. But this has been a three-week period that I think has been a little hotter than most years, yeah.
What does it look like when you go to buy your coffee or you're walking around? Are you in constant conversation?
There's lots of inquiry, but it's all healthy stuff. And one thing I will say is that I don't mind the discussion. Like, that people are passionate about this code, and I think that's to be celebrated. The umpires are no different. Incredibly passionate about the code. So discussion's fine. Debate around philosophy in regards to laws, that's all cool too. I prefer us to steer away from degradation or abuse of umpires or umpiring as a whole, particularly if we're not intimately informed about what the umpires are actually being asked to do. So, you know, the old notion of hate the player, don't hate the game. But other than that, the discussion's great.
So we had Paddy Dangerfield at the start of the show, and I asked him, when you went to Twitter on Saturday night, did you take a moment to think, okay, so this is more than just my personal view? So when he tweets absolute disgrace, is that problematic for umpires, do you think?
When I saw it, I went, I'm so glad, because Pat's never had a crack at me personally on the field or whatever. He's actually really a great guy to work with, right? So I immediately went, he's making reference to the rule. So that's fine. You know, Pat's out there at the coalface. So the players are going to have a really intimate view and understanding as to how the law affects them. So I've got no drama with that. So the way he's articulated that sits really well with me, because he's permitted to have a view. I wasn't as comfortable with then others tacking on the back of then having an assessment of umpiring as a whole. All areas of football, business, health services, there's improvement opportunities everywhere in the world, just as there is with umpiring. But what then came of that was, you know, again, the old outrage bucket gets tipped out, and certainly not Pat, but others then use that as the catalyst to direct their vitriol towards umpiring as a whole. And look, we're okay. You know what? We're going to be okay. We're incredibly well supported at the elite level by the AFL and the coaches, et cetera. My concern then is how it resonates down to St. Bede's Mentone Tigers or the Bowie Sharks when I'm walking the dog and I'm seeing a 14-year-old kid copping it from a 50-year-old parent. So that's the stuff that we live in.
So what we said we wouldn't do, Ray, is when we discuss this segment, is you wouldn't be the spokesman for the umpiring department. You'd tell your own story. So you answer these how is best. Do you understand the frustration from the outside around the contact below the knees and what seems to be the prioritising of one player's legs over one player's head?
Yeah, so that's one way to view it. From my personal perspective, when there were two distinctly different rules that were brought in. One was to do with sliding knees and feet first, and the other is contact below the knees. So they're not one. They didn't morph into something, as I've heard touted earlier in the week. They're two distinctly different rules. But they were there and brought in as a suite of rules to curb an increased incidence of horrific lower limb injuries in the workplace of players. So people would be aware of the Lindsay Thomas, Gary Rowan one. That was a very public one, AFL elite level. Not as many people would have seen the Jamie Graham one in the Waffle. That's a beauty if you want to have a look at that one and yep. YouTube that. And so we had this situation where you'd have almost like a rugby union situation where players would clear out the ruck and then the second player would come through and collect the football. So the football was secondary. Dispose of your opponent and your teammate would collect the ball. Yep. So it was about trying to get rid of that. The outrage piece is interesting, and I don't think there's a difference between wanting to prioritise a player's legs versus another player's head. With the rule, the situation is you have a player who elects to go to ground. So he's allowed to. Absolutely, you're allowed to go to ground to collect the football. You can attack the ball like that. However, if you make, and this is important, forceful contact below the knee of an opponent in electing to go to ground, then you'll be penalised with a free kick. Now, you can have your position on that rule. Everyone's going to have a view. So that's all cool, right? I'm just explaining what the rule is. So
how do you distinguish forceful in that case?
So
you know, Cripps topples over Phillips. There is contact, no question.
Yep.
I cannot have that as forceful contact. So how do you distinguish forceful contact?
And this is really interesting because I would say to you, okay, and I heard your position last night, and I was like, well, his contact has meant that the players ended up going to ground. Now, he fell over him, and people will say, oh, and he did this or he did that. And I just, before I come back to forceful, can I just finish off the other piece by saying there are actually a couple of caveats about contact below the knees. So one is if, and this is for the people who are listening, if you dive to mark the football and you're on the ground and you make contact, that's not a free kick. You're allowed to dive to mark the ball. If you get knocked over, like you get bumped, pushed, shoved by an opponent and you go to ground, that's not your fault. You can't get penalised for contact below the knees. And you're allowed to smother a kick. And if you make contact below the knees, that's okay. So I just want to park that. Yep. So there's some bits and pieces that go along with the rule. In terms of force, it's really interesting. You see the one that's the Jamie Graham one that would be the example, and you go, wow, that's forceful, yes, right? That's clear and obvious to everyone. And then there'll be ones where a player might reach out with his hands, and then you go, there's no force there, right? So there's 10 and 0.
Yes.
So when we get to sort of 4, 5, 6, 7, so is it a free kick or isn't it? Right? It's only a minor ACL. It'll only be out for 2 weeks. That's okay. I won't pay a free kick for that. Oh, no, that's a 4-week ACL. I better pay a free kick. So we don't have any sort of, I don't know, like a little computer on our hip that tells us that that's gone over a certain level of force and we have to pay a free. So this real-time implementation and adjudication is quite challenging. I think if the player goes to ground, and I understand that players will milk free kicks, they milk them all. Okay, they know how to work them all. But if the player elects to go to ground, he's made that choice, contact has clearly been made, it forces a player and he falls to the ground, that's a clear indication to me that's sufficient force to warrant a free kick. Just my personal view. One last thing with that. If a player jumps out of the road, so you come in and you decide to dive at the ball, you elect to go to ground, and I have to take evasive action and I jump over you, did you make any contact to me at all? You didn't.
Yep.
We are allowed to pay a free kick in that instance. Okay? So the player had to take evasive action to avert having forceful contact made to his leg, right, because the guy's cannonballed in and he's jumped out of the road. We're allowed to pay a free kick then.
Okay.
Okay? So there are all these nuances that relate to the law, and then there's real-time on-field, one look, bang, make a decision. So we're going to be looking for relevant cues. Player elects to go to ground. Tick. Contact made. Player falls to the ground as a result. Tick. Free kick paid. So the practical implementation of the rule has some subtleties and some challenges,
yep,
as they all do, mate.
Is Dustin Martin usually a pretty cool character out on the field?
The only time Dustin has ever, and I've umpired Dustin, I would have thought, maybe 15, 20 times. We've only ever spoken once. It was in round two of this year, and I approached Dustin after quarter time. So he had Greenwood going to him at stoppage, and so he would go to Pendlebury, and it was sort of mix and match sort of setup. And he put his arm across the waist of Scott at a throw-in, which we often use as a cue to go, oh, is he holding him? Is that a free kick? And so I just went up to him and said, hey, I understand what's happening here. Just don't whack your arm across his waist because you run the risk of incurring a free kick, mate. And he shook me and asked me how I was going and, you know, how the world was, right? He was really happy with it. So Dustin's an incredibly respectful guy. He doesn't come to us complaining about anything at all. He gets on with playing footy.
Was it odd to observe what you would have watched on telly?
I haven't seen that from Dustin before. So I saw a quarter of the game only because I had my own game up in Brisbane. But I've seen the stuff since, and that's not something I think anyone often sees with Dustin.
Do you think he was, from the chatter, do you think he was niggled in an unacceptable way?
It's incredible. It's a really interesting question. I was talking to my brother-in-law who used to play in the NRL, and they talk about how they used to target kickers and playmakers. You know, Cooper Cronk recently copped a late hit. His brother was a halfback, played for Manly. He got a broken jaw one day when a North Queensland player hit him late in the face. And we're just talking about treatment of the stars and in different codes and how that proliferates and then how the code goes about addressing those issues. I do remember when I first started, you know, you'd have Buckley and Hurd and Voss, and then it morphed into the Judds and the Cousins and these sorts of guys. And so at different eras, just had different approaches. So it's not new. Did I see any, as I said, I only saw a quarter of the game up at GWS. But there's nothing that I've seen that was overt.
And how intense a derby? How intense is a derby?
They're incredible. So we have blockbusters here that we understand in Victoria and old rivals, big numbers at the crowd and what have you. You get a showdown or a derby, they had their own feel and they're their own beast. My very first derby was when all the rock stars were playing for West Coast. So you had Judd Cousins-Kerr and Dean Cox in the centre and Peter Bell and the Carr brothers and Grover and yeah. These sorts of lads were running around from Fremantle, and they basically swung punches at each other for 2 hours. But it was so incredible, the intensity of the game, and the whole town, like nothing else matters.
Yep.
So we're going over there this week, and I'm really excited about the opportunity to be a part of that.
Good luck with it.
Thanks very much, mate.
Thanks for coming in again. Ray Chamberlain, every couple of weeks, he'll pop by. We'll talk matters umpiring from a personal perspective, and he'll give you a feel as how you go about it when you choose to blow the whistle and when you don't. 0433 98 11 16. Shoot through your messages.